Administrative Rule 640. It sounds like the title of a sleep aid, doesn't
It
it?
does. It sounds like the most boring thing on planet Earth.
Something you file away and just forget about.
Yeah.
But today, we're going to find out why Administrative Rule 640 might actually be one of the most, well, destructive pieces of writing to hit the Illinois outdoor industry in decades. We're looking at a report from the American Hunting Lease Association, the AHLA, about a change from back in June 2015.
Right.
And the core of this whole deep dive is a question that seems really simple, but is apparently very, very expensive. What is an outfitter?
And that's the thing. For anyone listening, if you work in the outdoors or own land or just run a small business, you know that definitions, they aren't just words.
No.
In the legal world, a definition is a boundary line. It determines who gets taxed, who gets regulated, and,
Right.
well, who gets shut down.
Exactly. So let's just skip the dictionary for a second. We all know what an outfitter is in the real world. You go to Colorado, you hire a guy with a string of mules, he packs your tent, he cooks your beans, and
Wow.
he physically guides you up a mountain to find an elk. That's the archetype.
That's the operational reality. It's a service based on, physical provision, safety, and real field expertise.
The U.S. Forest Service even agrees with that. Their definition is all about providing equipment, saddle animals, boats, that kind of thing.
And actual guidance.
But the Illinois Department of Natural Resources, the DNR, they apparently decided that definition was a little too narrow.
They didn't just rewrite it. I mean, they expanded it to a point where it arguably loses all meaning.
Okay, so what is the new rule?
Under the amendment to Rule 640, the state of Illinois defined an outfitter as, and I'm quoting here, any individual or business that solicits or secures waterfowl, deer, and/or turkey hunting clients for a landowner or tenant or another outfitter.
Solicits or secures. I want to pause on those two words because they are doing a lot of heavy lifting there.
They are doing all the lifting. By using solicits or secures, they completely remove the need for any field presence.
So you don't have to provide a tent?
Nope. You don't have to provide a boat. You
Right.
don't even have to be in the same zip code as the hunter.
You just have to be the person who connected the hunter to the land.
That's it.
Okay, so let's play this out. If I'm a web developer in Chicago and I build a website, let's call it findillinoisdeer.com,
Right.
where farmers can list their property and hunters can book a week. Am I an outfitter?
Under this text, yes, absolutely. You are securing clients for a landowner.
Okay, what if I'm a travel agent? A hunter calls me and says, "Book me a flight to Peoria and find me a lodge that has turkey hunting." I book it. Am I an outfitter now?
Technically, yes.
Yeah.
You solicited and secured that client. This is the definition trap we're talking about.
Yep.
The net is cast so wide it catches everyone.
Marketing agencies, booking brokers.
Trade publications. Literally anyone who facilitates the transaction.
It's like saying a travel agent who books your flight to Aspen is a ski instructor.
That is the perfect analogy.
Yeah.
The travel agent processes the credit card.
Right.
The ski instructor physically ensures you don't hit a tree.
Yeah.
They're two completely different skill sets, different liability.
But the Illinois DNR decided to regulate them as if they're the exact same person.
And the AHLA report, it mentions this just caught the whole industry completely flat-footed.
Yeah, no roundtable, no. Hey, what do you guys think about this?
No, they claim the major hunting lease companies were never contacted before the hearing. It was just a unilateral change.
And when you see a sudden regulatory change like that, you have to ask.
What does it cost?
Oh, it costs. And this is where I want to do some math because when you first hear the numbers, you might think, okay, that's steep, but it's a business expense.
Right.
But let's break down the actual impact here.
Let's do it.
The new rule says that these paper outfitters, we can call them that, they have to buy a permit.
Okay.
The cost is between $2,500 and $4,000.
Which, for a massive corporation, that's a rounding error. But we're not talking about big corporations.
Not at all. We're talking about booking agents. These are often one man or one woman shows.
Working from a home office.
Exactly. Their whole business model is taking a commission on a lease.
Right. So let's look at a typical lease. Say a farmer leases a property for deer hunting for what, 2,500 bucks.
Okay.
A booking agent usually takes a commission. Let's be generous, say 15 to 20%.
So that's maybe $400 or $500 of revenue per lease.
Per lease.
Okay, so if the permit fee is $4,000, you need to book 8 to 10 hunts just to pay the government for the right to exist.
Before you've paid for your website, your phone, your insurance.
Or your own groceries. You start the year $4,000 in the hole.
For a small, specialized agent who maybe focuses on high-quality, low-volume stuff, that fee alone could wipe out 50% of their annual net profit.
It turns a viable small business into a hobby that loses money. The source calls it a crippling tax. And looking at those margins, I don't think that's hyperbole.
Not at all.
Yeah.
But as bad as the money is, there's a second requirement in this rule that feels, well, it feels like a poison pill.
You're talking about the data requirement.
The client lists.
This is the part that really made my jaw drop.
Yeah. It's not enough to pay the fee. The DNR is requiring these new outfitters to turn over the names and contact information for every single client they deal with.
Let's be crystal clear about what that means. If I'm a booking agent, my business is my list.
It's your asset.
I have a list of farmers I trust and a list of hunters who pay on time. And the state is saying, give us that database.
Imagine asking Coca-Cola to hand over their secret formula just to get a business license.
Or a tech recruiter to hand over their list of candidates to the Department of Labor. It's proprietary information.
And what happens to that list once the state has it? This isn't just a trade secret issue. It's a privacy issue.
A huge one.
In many states, information held by the DNR can be subject to Freedom of Information Act, FOIA requests. Now, there are exemptions, but...
Do you want to bet your whole business on a bureaucratic exemption?
Exactly. And in the hunting industry, we have to be real about this. There are anti-hunting groups who would love to get a searchable database of every landowner in Illinois who leases their ground for hunting.
Oh, absolutely. If that list gets out, you're exposing your landowners to potential harassment.
You're exposing your hunters. And just from a business perspective, you're handing the state a roadmap to bypass you completely.
How so?
If the state just publishes a list of authorized hunting leases, why does the hunter need the booking agent anymore?
Right. So you pay $4,000 to destroy your own profit margins, and then you hand over your intellectual property to a government body that might get your clients harassed.
It creates a situation where the only logical move for a booking agent is
to leave.
To get out of Illinois.
And that leaving is the trigger for the ripple effect. Because I think it's easy to look at this and just say, well, tough luck for the booking agents.
But the ecosystem is way more fragile than that.
It is.
You have to look at the chain of custody here. The economy of outdoor recreation, it's like a ladder.
Mm-hmm.
If you kick out the bottom rung, the person at the top falls.
Let's walk through that Access Illinois example from the source. It's a nonprofit connecting hunters to farmers.
Mm-hmm.
Under this rule, they're an outfitter. So if they shut down because they can't afford the fee or won't hand over their member list, what happens to the farmer?
Okay, let's picture a specific farmer. We'll call him Farmer John. Yeah. He's got 300 acres of corn and timber in Pike County.
Okay.
Corn prices are down, diesel is up, and property taxes in Illinois are. Well, they're Illinois property taxes.
They're high.
Very high. Farmer John isn't getting rich, but he leases the hunting rights on his timber for $5,000 a year. That check pays the property tax.
So it's the difference between breaking even and going into debt.
Exactly. But Farmer John's a farmer. He's on a combine 12 hours a day. He doesn't know how to run SEO marketing. He doesn't have an email list.
And he doesn't want to screen strangers from the internet to see if they're safe to have on his land.
That's the key. He relies on the booking agent. The agent vets the hunters, handles insurance, collects the check, and hands it to him.
So if the booking agent leaves Illinois because of Rule 640...
Farmer John loses his connection to the market.
He has an empty woodlot. No hunter, no check.
And here is the dark reality of agriculture right now. When that supplemental income disappears, the pressure to sell the land becomes insurmountable.
You sell it off acre by acre just to pay the bills.
And who buys it? Usually not another farmer.
Developers?
Or large corporate conglomerates.
Mm.
But usually when hunting land near a city is sold, it gets subdivided, the timber gets bulldozed, the habitat is gone.
This is the irony that is just, it drives me crazy. The DNR, the Department of Natural Resources, is tasked with conservation.
Mm.
Their budget relies heavily on hunting licenses and habitat stamps.
It's the conservation paradox. By regulating the paper outfitters out of existence, they disrupt the revenue stream for the landowner. If the landowner sells to a developer, the deer habitat is gone.
And if the habitat is gone, there are no deer.
If there are no deer, no one buys hunting licenses. The DNR is effectively cutting its own throat to collect a $4,000 permit fee.
They're stepping over dollars to pick up time.
And risking the entire tourism economy of the state while they do it. Illinois is a destination for whitetail deer. People fly in from Florida, Texas, New York.
They rent cars, stay in hotels, eat at diners.
Right. And if the booking agent stops sending people to Illinois because it's too legally risky, those hunters go to Iowa. They go to Kentucky. The money leaves.
So we've established this rule is economically dangerous and logically flawed. The big question is, why? Why did they do it?
The AHLA asked that exact question. And the answer they report getting is,
well, it's baffling.
Lay it on me.
According to the source, DNR officials stated that the rule solved no specific problem.
Wait, they admitted that. That's what's reported. There was no rash of complaints about booking agents, no safety crisis. The justification was purely semantic.
It's semantic.
They argued that facilitating a hunt is no different than guiding a hunt, so they should be regulated the same way.
That is just quintessential bureaucratic logic. These two things involve money and deer. Therefore, they are the same thing.
It ignores all the nuance of the industry.
Right.
And because the explanation is so thin, it forces you to look for other motivations. The AHLA report, frankly, calls it a cash grab.
It's hard to argue with that. If you're a state agency and you're short on budget and you see all these booking agents moving money around,
you think, hey, let's grab a slice of that pie.
But like we just calculated, the pie they're trying to grab is tiny compared to the pie they're knocking off the table.
And there's also the element of how they enforced it. This wasn't a coming soon announcement.
No, this is the gotcha factor. The source notes the DNR began calling businesses to tell them about the change after the compliance deadline had already passed.
Imagine that phone call.
You pick up the phone and the government says, by the way, the laws changed last month. You owe us $4,000 and you're already breaking the law.
It sets up an adversarial relationship immediately. Mm-hmm. Instead of partnering with the industry to promote Illinois as a hunting destination, they're treating these businesses like ATMs.
Or criminals.
Or criminals, yeah.
So where does that leave the industry? The report mentions the AHLA reached out to the director at the time, Wayne Rosenthal, and even the governor.
They called for a suspension of enforcement, which is the only logical move. You have to stop the bleeding.
Because if you drive these agents out, they don't come back easily.
No. Once a booking agent builds relationships in Ohio or Missouri, they stay there.
It really highlights how fragile these ecosystems are. We think of the economy as this big, sturdy machine.
Mm-hmm.
But in rural areas, it's a delicate web. The web designer feeds the agent, who feeds the farmer, who feeds the local diner owner. You pull one string, rule 640, and the whole thing shakes.
And that's why these deep dives matter. It's never just about a permit fee. It's about the knock-on effects that nobody bothers to model out before they sign the legislation.
It brings me back to that initial thought about definitions. We let lawyers and bureaucrats define words, and we assume they know what they're doing.
Right.
But when outfitter comes to mean anyone with an email address, we have a problem.
We do. And it raises a bigger question about the role of government in resource management. We trust them to manage the deer herd, you know, biologically.
Sure.
But are they qualified to manage the business of the deer herd?
That's the friction point, isn't it?
Because if you overregulate the mechanism that gives the resource value, in this case, the ability to lease the land, you destroy the incentive to protect the resource in the first place.
I want to leave the listener with a scenario to chew on. We talked about the slippery slope. If a booking agent is an outfitter because they secured a client, what about a trade show organizer?
Ooh, right.
What about the guy who organizes the big Whitetail Expo? He is technically securing clients for hundreds of outfitters.
Per booth.
Does he owe the state $4,000 per booth?
Under the strict letter of this rule, you could make that case in court. And that is why bad definitions are so dangerous. They create infinite liability.
It's a cautionary tale. Whether you hunt or not, pay attention to the fine print in your own industry. Because eventually, someone might decide that what you do is no different from something completely else.
And send you a bill for it.
Always read the fine print.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for diving deep with us on this one. It's a bit of a dense topic, but the implications are massive for rural America. We'll catch you on the next one.
Stay curious.